likely of activists in some ways. You know, the least likely of activists. Folks that are first-time activists coming into this stuff for the very first time. Not long-term progressive activists or people who worked in the regulatory arena. They didn't have this stuff clouding their heads of all this past that said we have to do it this way or have to do it that way. They just said this is the right thing, is actually to seize that ability, the authority for us to make decisions about what our community is going to look like in 20, 40, or 60 years. And so they began coming to a conclusion, and that conclusion was they had to take these doctrines on frontally, that the local ordinance making had to be more about just the imminent harm coming in, when that imminent harm could be overridden, the ordinances could be overridden by those doctrines that were being brought against them. And so they decided to begin writing these ordinances to directly challenge those legal doctrines which keep our communities subordinate to those corporations. Because they understood that sustainability is impossible unless those people who are directly affected by the unsustainable practices are the ones who are deciding whether those practices occur. Folks, you know, state legislatures, folks 500 miles away, they don't care. They don't care. The community's a dumping ground. It's a toilet. They're going to use it for as long as they can until people stand up and say, we're not going to do it anymore. You know, the kids that sat in on the lunch counter at Woolworths, they didn't write letters to Woolworths. I mean, I suppose they did in the beginning. They said, hey, please desegregate your lunch counters, right? But eventually at some point, they said, no more. Things are so bad that we need to go in and actually break the law. We need to disobey the law in a very structured way, but we need to do it. And so they did. And in fact, this country is built on people not following the law. The Declaration of Independence, people breaking free, self-governance, all that stuff that's built into us that we seem to have lost. We think it's time to return to that place. And I think communities in Pennsylvania and other places certainly are beginning to lead the way, which is to say, the cost of doing nothing is more now than the cost of doing something, putting our municipalities on the line to take on these four legal doctrines, right? And so they started to do that. Over 100 communities in Pennsylvania have passed those laws. In addition, the laws have spread. We have communities in New Hampshire and Maine who are taking on Nestle Corporation, saying no corporate water withdrawals in our community. Okay. There are folks in New Mexico and in Pennsylvania and elsewhere who have passed anti-fracking laws, saying we're not going to allow corporations to frack here. We have the first county in New Mexico in 30 days, which is going to ban all hydrocarbon extraction within their beautiful county. What are we waiting for? Yeah. I mean, seriously, how bad does shit have to get before we actually begin to be less obedient to how the structure operates? When we get called as counsel for municipalities, we give them the worst case scenario. Could get sued, could go bankrupt. This is very serious work that these municipalities are taking on, that these elected officials and other people are taking on. In places where their elected officials aren't willing to do it, citizen groups are coming together to override them through initiative processes and home rule charter stuff. People ask, where is all this headed? In other words, what's the point if a court's just going to come in and overturn the law as being against the doctrines? Well, we hope that courts won't. We've actually found judges who have ruled in our favor in other cases before. But it's very important that people understand these ordinances are not the end point. Just because a judge rules that it's in violation of these other legal doctrines, that's not the end of the story. That's the first step. Because these communities now in Pennsylvania, New Mexico, and New Hampshire, and Washington State are now stitching themselves together to talk about what state constitutional change looks like. And eventually, 10 years, 20 years down the road, these states are going to come together through their municipalities to make federal constitutional change. It all comes down to what our theory of social change is. Can we be obedient folks petitioning our legislatures to do the right thing for us? Or is it time to take that shit into our own control and do it ourselves, no matter what the cost? United States have passed those ordinances now. In addition to that, we've been working on something called the Rights of Nature. One of the components of those ordinances contain rights of nature clauses which recognize the rights of ecosystems and natural communities to exist, flourish, and naturally evolve. Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Maine, New Mexico, other places have adopted these ordinances into place, which refuse to recognize that nature is property under the law. The controversial statement that we sometimes make is that there's never been an environmental movement in the United States. And we say that there's never been an environmental movement in the United States because movements transform things that were treated as things under the law into being rights-bearing persons. The abolitionists were about a movement to transform slaves and African Americans from being property into being persons. The suffragists were about transforming women from being property of their husband or their brother into being persons. That's what movements do. We've had an environmental movement that's been focused on treating nature as property to be regulated. Under our system of law, if you have a 10-acre deed to a parcel of land, it carries with it the right to destroy the ecosystems on that parcel of land. That's the system of law that we have. These communities are beginning to adopt laws that refuse to recognize that nature and ecosystems are property under the law, and then actually allow residents to step into the shoes of a river or a mountain to bring an action as a plaintiff to protect those rights of ecosystems. Now, the work in the United States in 2001 to 2006 were carried down to Ecuador, which was beginning to work on a new national constitution in the country. They found out about the work of Wells Township, and they found out about the work of Tamaco Borough, and they found out about the work of these small communities that were actually passing these laws, and they asked us to come down to help them write a new national constitution. That constitution, which had a whole committee of delegates working on a fundamental rights section of the constitution, brought us in to help them fashion the law. Because they wanted to become the first country in the world to transform from a regulatory, property-based system of environmental protection to a rights-based system of environmental protection. They took the language from the United States communities and they actually wrote it into their national constitution, which was ratified overwhelmingly in 2008, making Ecuador the first country to do that. And we've been training judges in the Galapagos to deal with rights of nature cases that are coming in the door. The group that we work with in Ecuador has set up a 1-800 number for people to call to ask an ombudsman to begin representing rights of nature cases. All of that stuff has been happening. We just got the first enforcement decisions. I just want to share them with you before we wrap up here. One was brought by a group of residents using the constitutional provisions on behalf of the Vilcabamba River. Vilcabamba River, located in the province of Loja in Ecuador. The local government there was actually building a road project that was altering the course of the river by dumping that road refuse into the river. The residents there brought a case in which the plaintiff was the Vilcabamba River. They brought it into the local court, and the local court agreed with them in the first ruling ever in the globe on behalf of an ecosystem as a plaintiff. And then awarding injunctive relief and damages to repair and restore the ecosystem itself. We believe that the rights of nature stuff is the next horizon for environmental law. It's actually about building a real environmental movement that makes it a rights-based movement rather than just something that raises consciousness or something that attempts to regulate around the edges. We think that's the next step. We've been in touch with Nepal. We just made a visit there. They're talking about putting rights of nature into their national constitution. The Maldives Islands, where we had a conversation last year about building in a right to climate. ecosystems as well as people within the Maldives that could then be used to sue polluters around the globe, including countries, to actually begin to confront the damage that's being caused to the Maldives and other low-lying island nations on global warming. But it's all pinned to that rights stuff because we think it's a rights-based movement that's beginning to arise. So I just wanted to end. I know we're coming to the end of the time here. And I just wanted to say, with no offense to anyone, take our collective heads out of our collective asses. And people all the time say, well, surely you're not saying to us we need to stop doing the frontline work that we're doing. Surely you're not saying to us that we got to stop appealing permits and doing that, all that kind of stuff. And I have a mixed response to that now. I used to have something different. But the first one is that there are a limited amount of monetary resources circulating out to nonprofit organizations and other groups doing environmental work. Those resources have to shift. Because to build this new system of law, to give birth to this new collective consciousness, it takes money. And the funders have to stop giving money to the regulatory stuff. I think that's about as blunt as I've ever said it. But they have to stop. Those are sponges that are taking up money. And we have to do the elbow space to actually build new room for this stuff to happen. As for the frontline, thanks, Dave. As for the frontline activists, the fact is, things would be even worse now without the courageous work of people that have gone before us to fight those frontline battles. But there has to be a time when we re-examine whether those battles have been successful. We have to re-gird into a different position, and we need to begin to frame the different fight which is now upon us, which is the collapse of our entire planetary ecosystem. So, here's Derek Jensen again. This is where I'll end, because I know we're running out of time, and then we'll head to the panels. And I'd like to return to this hope thing. When I say, you know, things are hopeless and we're fucked and all those things, this is what Derek Jensen has to say in his book, and I think the words are right on target. They asked Derek, well, if things are hopeless, why do you do anything at all, right? And he said, quote, because I'm in love. With salmon, with trees outside my window, with baby lampreys living in sandy stream bottoms, with slender salamanders crawling through the duff. And if you love, you act to defend your beloved. Of course results matter to you, but they don't determine whether or not you make the effort. You don't simply hope your beloved survives and thrives. You do whatever it takes. If my love doesn't cause me to protect those I love, it's not love. And he goes on, last paragraph. He says, a wonderful thing happens when you give up on hope, which is that you realize you never needed it in the first place. You realize that giving up on hope didn't kill you. It didn't even make you less effective. In fact, it made you more effective because you ceased relying on someone or something to solve your problems. You ceased hoping your problems would somehow get solved through the magical assistance of God, the Great Mother, the Sierra Club, valiant tree sitters, brave salmon, or even the earth itself. And you just began doing whatever it takes to solve those problems yourself. I think there's a new world waiting to be born. And we've come to this conference looking for you, the folks that are ready to do that. And in the panel following this one in the fur room, that's what we're going to be talking about, is the nuts and bolts of this stuff and actually getting this stuff moving in more places, in addition to Lane County, Oregon, and Benton County, Oregon, where stuff is already moving. And a final quote from Jensen, because I think it hits home. He said, if we wish to stop the atrocities, we need merely to step away from the isolation. There is a whole world waiting for us, ready to welcome us home. Thank you.